Hey everyone, welcome to our weekly Course in Miracles study group. This is Corinne, and as always, I am just so excited to take this time to join with you in strengthening these healing ideas in our minds. Before we dive into our first meditation, our only meditation, I did want to mention again that within the next several weeks, I don't know exactly, I will be upgrading our conference line. So I will be announcing for a few weeks before we do that, the new call-in details. I'll send out an email as well. Sometimes my emails might end up in your spam filter, so just keep that in mind. Hopefully you can take a look if you haven't gotten an email and you don't have, you know, call-in details in a few weeks, but I will announce it on the call for a few weeks out so we make sure that everybody has that new info. So before we dive into our reading, let's join together in silence. So turning your attention from without to within. Maybe beginning, if you'd like, with just taking a few deep breaths. Knowing that this time is holy, we are joining together for a holy purpose. And where two or more are joined, here is God, here we transcend the ego, here healing happens, in this holy instant. And as you turn within, connecting with your willingness to see differently, to experience miracles, and to loose the world from all we thought it was. In this holy instant, we give to you. Be you in charge, for we would follow you, certain that your direction gives us peace. If we need a word, a thought, or a tranquil open mind, these are the gifts that Holy Spirit gives. And we gladly place Holy Spirit in charge tonight by our request. And taking a nice, mindful, deep breath in and out. And as you're ready, coming together to our perception of right here, right now. All right. So, if you have the CE edition, the purple book by the Circle of Atonement, we are on page 827. The subheading is Laughing Away the Tiny Mad Idea. In all the other editions, the subheading is The Hero of the Dream. In the Foundation for Inner Peace edition, that is Chapter 27, Part 8. In the original edition by Course in Miracles Society, it's Chapter 27, Part 9. And in the Sparkle edition, it is page 641. I was sharing before we started recording that I'm hoping we'll make it through this whole section tonight because in the commentary, so I'm a member of Course Companions, which is the Circle of Atonement membership site where basically there's a reading schedule, which I never thought I would be into, but I am, a reading schedule to help keep you on track. And every day you get a commentary that Robert Perry writes. And for the commentary that corresponds to the section that we're reading tonight has a really beautiful exercise. So I'm hoping we'll have a chance to explore that together. So let's dive in. So Laughing Away the Tiny Mad Idea or The Hero of the Dream. I will just start out by saying that it's pretty interesting if we get through this whole section, which I do think we will, we can keep in mind just all the horrific events that have just even happened this past weekend. There have been a number of shootings in the States. What this section is teaching us might seem kind of impossible, but obviously it's not because it's literally talking about laughing away the tiny mad idea that we could possibly think that these bodies are real and that the separation is real. That is insane. So let's dive in. The body is the central figure in the dreaming of the world. There is no dream without it, nor does it exist without the dream, in which it acts as if it were a person to be seen and believed and be believed. It takes the central place in every dream, which tells the story of how it was made by other bodies, born into the world outside the body, lives a little while, and dies to be united in the dust with other bodies dying like itself. In the brief time allotted it to live, it seeks for other bodies as its friends and enemies. Its safety is its main concern. Its comfort is its guiding rule. It tries to look for pleasure and avoid the things that would be hurtful. Above all, it tries to teach itself its pains and joys are different and can be told apart. So this is clearly, it's going to, in paragraph number 3, it refers to the body's serial adventures from the time of birth to dying, which I think is absolutely hysterical. But if we really just sort of listen to what it's saying here, it's so spot on. Everything that we do involves the body. We have stories surrounding, you know, what our birthday is, who our birth parents are, the bodies that we came from, you know, the body that I'm in right now, how the body feels. I have to wake up the body in the morning and get enough sleep for the body and feed the body and, you know, wash the body. And it's the body's serial adventure. So it's saying that this is our central dream figure. It said that it doesn't exist without the dream, and there's no dream without it. So that is pretty, pretty profound. And it's, I know I can really relate to this sentence where it says its safety is its main concern and its comfort is its guiding rule. So I joke around, just to give you a really stupid example, whenever I'm traveling, I bring my pillow with me, and I joke around that I'm a pillow snob because I just like my pillow and I like a certain type of pillow, but that's all about bodily comfort and ensuring that my body's comfort will be met if I am, you know, staying somewhere other than my house. So it's, you know, me trying to keep the body comfortable and safe instead of staying in a state of trust that, you know, everything is unfolding as it should and that I can be fine regardless of the pillow that I'm sleeping with. So I will pause there. Anything coming up for anyone so far? Travel definitely brings this out. I'm sure most of you probably know or maybe saw on my Facebook post. I talked about it last week and the week before, I think, that I was in Portugal for almost 2 weeks. And travel really brings this stuff up in terms of bodily comfort and being able to see how much, at least I'll speak for myself, how much I want to ensure that I'm going to be comfortable. You know, where am I going to eat? Where am I going to find lunch? Where am I going to find dinner? Will it be food that I like? It all, it's the serial adventures of the body. I think that's so funny. Okay, let's keep reading the next paragraph. The dreaming of the world takes many forms because the body seeks in many ways to prove it is autonomous and real. It puts things on itself that it has bought with little metal discs or paper strips the world proclaims as valuable and good. It works to get them, doing senseless things, and tosses them away for senseless things it does not need and does not even want. It hires other bodies that they may protect it and collect more senseless things that it can call its own. It looks about for special bodies that can share its dream. Sometimes it dreams it is a conqueror of bodies weaker than itself, but in some phases of the dream, it is the slave of bodies which would hurt and torture it. Isn't it funny to, like, be talking about the body in, like, the third person? it cracks me up. And, again, how relatable is this, that it puts things on itself that it has bought with little discs or paper strips that the world proclaims as valuable? Like, this just kind of sounds like Jesus is sort of poking fun at the meaningless things that we do and that we collect, things that we don't even need or want, and this idea also of hiring other bodies to protect it, collecting more senseless things, finding special bodies that can share its dream. Yeah. Anything coming up for anyone yet so far? Questions or comments or insights?
My comment is about the title, Laughing Away the Tiny Mad Idea.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so real. We really do put so much emphasis on the body. I'm 69,
yes,
and I'm realizing that my body is not what it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, is not as spiritual as I am, I have to be aware of my body. It's
mm-hmm.
my temple.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the interesting thing. The term that you just said, temple, I was just reading, it was earlier in the book, I think in chapter 8, I want to say, when it's the ego's temple, obviously the laws of the world, like all you know, obviously the body being the ego's temple comes with it all the beliefs, the whole belief system in everything of the world, aging, sickness, death, all that. But we can repurpose that, and that's, you know, as spiritual as you are, that's so important, that repurposing of the body. So it becomes, the Course actually said, a temple to the Holy Spirit, because it's repurposed now solely as a communication device and not for keeping the separation going. So even though you're 69, like even though it might seem like the body is behaving like, you know, they said it would when it got to that age or whatever, even though it might seem like we have these physical things coming up that are challenging us, and yes, we can be mindful and attentive and we have to be where we are, but it's also at the same time so important to remember that those are ego hooks still trying to keep us believing that this is real. That's what they always are. It's another form of temptation to take this at face value, that this has got to be real because my body hurt, because my body's sick, you know, because fill in the blank.
Yeah,
so
I actually really like the thought, the temple for the Holy Spirit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. When I read that, I was surprised only because we, as Course students, usually shun the body. We're like, oh, the body's not real, you know, let's not pay any attention to it or talk about it even at all. And it literally said, repurposing the body, it becomes a temple of the Holy Spirit. If you have the CE, it's page 314. It's at the very bottom. The ego's temple thus becomes the temple of the Holy Spirit, where devotion to the Holy Spirit replaces devotion to the ego. How beautiful is that? That's chapter 8. I'm assuming, and I don't know if it's all the editions, but yeah, isn't that, that's pretty profound.
At some point, it also says, oh, go ahead.
John first, then Paula.
It's funny because just this morning I was rereading the 50 miracle principles, and number 20 says, miracles reawaken the awareness that the spirit, not the body, is the altar of truth. This is the recognition that leads to the healing power of the miracle. And that was, I don't know why that, I marked it here this morning, and I was like, well, I always think of, you know, oh, the body is the temple of blah, 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 and I read this again, and I was like, well, of course that makes sense. The spirit, of course, is where the truth is. So it's funny that this topic is coming up today, tonight.
Yeah, that is funny. I love those little synchronicities. And so how do we bridge the gap? Like, here we're seeing, I just read to you a quote from chapter 8 that says that, you know, the body becomes the temple of the Holy Spirit when it's repurposed. And then in this first 50 miracle principles, John, you just highlighted that it says the Spirit is the temple of truth. So how do we bridge that gap? How we bridge the gap? So by thinking of the body as the temple of the Holy Spirit, aren't we already making the body real in our mind? Like, I mean, thinking that this body right now that I'm touching is the temple of the Holy Spirit, in that belief is, or in that statement, is an inherent thought that this has got to be real. This section, how we bridge the gap, this section is leading us to looking at the tiny mat idea. We're going to get to this in upcoming paragraphs. And literally laughing them away because this isn't real. So in the dream, you know, we can repurpose this dream body to be the temple of the Holy Spirit and be communication, you know, a device to help us wake up. But it's that doesn't establish its reality. So that's how I sort of bridge the two together in my mind. That was helpful, John. Thank you. And Paula, did you want to add something?
I just wanted to add that somewhere in the book here, it talks about the body being a serviceable instrument mm-hmm. until we're ready to lay it down. And I like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I just try to keep in mind, even though there are times, you know, I have difficulties or aches or pains or something. But when I shift my perception to that thought, that it's supposed to be a serviceable instrument, it really gets me off of the fact that it doesn't feel serviceable at the moment. You know, it's like that shift in perception is it's just miraculous.
Yeah, it is miraculous. You know, I'll just throw this out there right now. This is really funny because this just came up for me today. And I have two friends who are also course students who currently are intermittent fasting. My one friend, her name is Brittany Shawley. If those of you who are on Facebook, you might have seen some of her videos. She's great. And she's doing this challenge, this 30-day challenge on intermittent fasting, which basically means like you just don't eat like maybe 8 p.m. to like 10 a.m. or whatever your time frame is. And it brought up so much crap in me. Like, I can't do that. I get too hungry. All about the comfort of the body. Like, all going back to everything that we just read in this first paragraph. And I was like, whoa, like, maybe I need to turn into this. And the guidance was to go ahead and give it a try, because what's going to come up are all the beliefs that I have in my mind. They're typically hidden, because the moment I feel hunger, I just eat, like, you know, without thinking about it. And this is going to give me a chance to look at some of those beliefs that are in my mind that I usually don't look at, because, you know, the moment that I might be hungry, I might just toss something into my mouth. So it was just an interesting thing that came about today surrounding bodily comfort and being willing to look at the beliefs that are beneath that. If anybody's interested, reach out to me and I can send you the link. So fun stuff. All right. Thank you so much, everybody, for your comments. So let's, I think we're on paragraph 3, right? Yeah, the serial adventures. The body's serial adventures from the time of birth to dying are the theme of every dream the world has ever had. The hero of this dream will never change, nor will its purpose. Though the dream itself takes many forms and seems to show a great variety of places and events wherein its quote-unquote hero finds itself, the dream has but one purpose taught in many ways. The single lesson does it try to teach again and still again, and yet once more, that it is cause and not effect. And you are its effects and cannot be its cause. Thus are you not the dreamer, but the dream. And so you wander idly in and out of places and events that it contrives. All right, let's break this down a little bit. So again, as we've talked about already, the body's serial adventures from the moment it seems to be born to the moment that it seems to die are the theme of every dream that the world has ever had. You know, the body, the ego wants to be the hero of this dream. Here's the big part of this paragraph. The dream has one purpose taught in many ways. So over and over and over again, the ego is trying to convince us and teach us that the body is not an effect, but the body is a cause, and you, your mind, is just an effect of the body. That's you're contained in this, you know, you're limited to it, and that it's you. It can't possibly, the ego wants you to believe that it can't possibly be its cause. Like, let me say that again. The ego wants you to believe that the body is not an effect, but that it is the cause. So you then become not a dreamer, but the dream. You're like that passive victim of a dream, and you're just tossed about, you know, as the dream wishes. You have no power because you are simply an effect. Wait, did I get that right? You're tossed about because you are, yeah, you're simply an effect, not the cause. You're not the dreamer of the dream. That is what the ego over and over and over is going to try to teach. And as it says, the dream has but one purpose, and that's taught in many ways. So that's the purpose of the dream, is to convince us that we are cause. No. I keep saying, I hope I didn't just confuse everybody, that we're the cause, that the body is the cause, not the effect. Let me just clarify that just to make sure if I didn't already confuse you. I just want to say that one more time. In truth, we are the dreamer of this dream. The sleeping mind is causing this dream. The effect ends up being a dream of separation. But the ego wants you to think that this is all a cause, and you know, we are affected by it, and we have no power in that whatsoever. It gets a little confusing because the Course uses cause and effect in two different ways. Capital C cause is God, and we are God's effects as sons of God. And then with this lowercase cause and effect, this is where, again, the ego is trying to say that the body is the cause and not an effect. So that's lowercase. I hope that was clear. It can be a little confusing. Questions, comments?
Well, would that have anything to do with realizing that we can choose what we think?
That's, I think, definitely
that we have a choice.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I know there was a time I didn't feel that I had a choice in anything. I wasn't
right.
aware in any way, shape, or form that I was choosing what was going on in my life. I felt like I was, you know, just being tossed about. And
yeah, absolutely. I think that's this whole idea that we've talked about so many times of taking, you know, radical responsibility. We can choose again. How many times does the Course say choose again?
It's
thank goodness.
So liberating, my God,
it is
to
so
know
liberating.
That we're doing this to ourselves.
Mm-hmm. That can piss off the ego. That can totally piss off the ego. And I think, you know, from an outsider perspective looking into the Course, that makes absolutely no sense. But I completely agree with you that it is totally liberating. Because otherwise, what's the alternative? We read about that last week. What's the alternative is that we are just a, you know, helpless victim, and we are just tossed about by a dream that we have, you know, absolutely nothing to do with. That's the other option. No, thank you.
But
hi.
One of the things that comes with that is taking responsibility for what you're thinking, what you're doing.
Yeah.
And so many times we'd rather project and blame somebody else.
Yeah, and play the victim.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a big one.
I have a question about this. This is Christy.
Sure.
I'm struggling with this big time right now with a difficult relationship. where I think it was Paula who said something about how, like, I'm choosing this. And when you say I'm choosing this, meaning, like, whatever we're experiencing in the external world or in the dream, we're actually somehow causing that with our thoughts.
Yeah.
Oh, my
but
gosh.
Not,
that's terrifying.
Not no, well, wait. It's not, like, okay, the risk there is that we go down a spiral of, like, oh, my God, I don't know what to think. Like, I'm what am I going to call forth? Like, OMG, you know, and that's not, there is, it's deeper than that. It, again, go back to what the course is talking about how the ego wrote the script. Like, the moment that we had this tiny mad idea that we're going to read about in this section tonight, the ego planned out every single, it wrote the script. It was like, this is the world. This is everything, you know, that's going to happen. So it's coming from, on one level, and if there's anybody that has insight coming up that you want to jump in and share, please do. But let me just, I don't want to lose my thought. There's an individual piece, but there's also a collective, like, you know, ego wrote the script, unconscious thing where this is already done and we are at the end mentally reviewing what's happened already. So it's not like you're just creating, we just create something out of thin air in the mind. What we're seeing is what has been already over and done with, and now our choice is to say, this is somehow coming from my sleeping split mind. I don't know how. And Holy Spirit, show me how to look at it. So does that help at all? It's not like it's just like, you know, I'm going to just dredge up this whole, you know, negative pattern of thinking and then call forth all these, like, original, you know, mistakes. Like, again, it partly goes back to the ego script, too.
Okay. Well, it helps a little. I'm, like, thinking there's been a lot of self-blame coming up around a certain relationship where a person decided not to talk to me. And I'm thinking, my ego is going crazy about how I created this. Like, I created this with my thoughts. I caused this person to not talk to me. And is that it?
No,
or,
you know, we're,
like,
you're, the whole bottom line is not guilty. Not, you are not guilty. That person is not guilty.
So
that's how you
get there.
It's tough.
Yeah.
But that's
keep going, I'm
the
sorry.
Very bottom line there. Not
yeah.
guilty.
So
and
what do we do with people's behavior that is hurtful?
It's
that
not your business. What people think of you is not your business. That's another tough
well,
one.
Well, as far
I'm
as in a relationship.
I'm in and out of that all the time.
Excuse me.
Hold on. I just want to stay paused. Okay, so okay, I think Christine is speaking right now, and then Christy, I want to come back to you to make sure you
yeah.
had if you were complete. So, Christine, what did you want to say?
I wanted to say the idea of calling for love or being loving. Sometimes people are calling for love, and well, the Course in Miracles really is all about love, and this idea. You're right, not guilty. But sometimes people are actually calling for love. And you have to, there's the reactive mind or the reactive ego that wants to react immediately, where it's great if you pause for inspiration. That's all I got to say.
That was beautiful, Christine. I that was really helpful. Just, again, that reactive mind is going to want to get in there and, like, try to, you know, fix. And you're absolutely right that the Course is all about being loving and that, you know, it's also a call for love a lot of times. So, Christy, to go back to your question, like, what do you do about people's behavior, do you mean like if they're mistreating you or?
Yes. Yeah. For instance, someone disappeared on me. We had a conflict and it was minor. Well, that's irrelevant. The conflict, and then there was no, like, coming together after that. It was just ghosted for 5 weeks, and I was devastated by that. And this is a potential, you know, here's a special relationship, dating relationship. And then all of a sudden came back, and, you know, when I tried to say – Yeah, sorry. Go ahead. Am I getting too much into details?
No, it's okay. No, what came up for me is that your job in this is to hold steady. So, like, taking on blame for, oh my gosh, I created this, is not what this is about. That's only solidifying the ego. That's only keeping everything stuck. Instead, this is a teaching learning situation for both of you. And like Christine said, it's either, you know, love or call for love. And so wherever, you know, sometimes we're not aware of our own call for love and, you know, come together with somebody else who's also calling for love, there might be some kind of fallout or, you know, something might happen. So rather than trying to get stuck in analyzing, like, how did I create this, which again, this is, as Paula said, not guilty. This is not about increasing guilt. This is about, again, saying, Holy Spirit, like, here you go. This hurts. I don't like this. I'm willing to look at my part in this, but I'm going to get still, and your part is to hold steady in Holy Spirit, in truth. And that's kind of where we're going with this section tonight, is that this section is leading us to say that, like, what you see with your body's eyes has to be given over to the Holy Spirit. We see form. We get arrested and stuck at what we see with the body's eyes. It's the Holy Spirit that can see beyond it. And so it's our small part in whatever situation we find ourselves in to be willing to hand that over, to let the Holy Spirit do the seeing for us and to hold steady.
And that can mean that you can still say something about how you felt about it to the person,
yeah,
right? It's not that you're
absolutely.
Okay,
yeah,
that seems
still,
to be
again,
making things worse.
Well,
like, I felt hurt that, you know, you took off. And he doesn't want to seem to hear that. So I've been giving that to Holy Spirit too, and I've been trying to find the love here, and that's tough. So,
well, maybe the loving, I mean, I don't know, but maybe one of the loving lessons is about you being able to, you know, speak your truth and your feelings and own them, you know, even if that other person doesn't want to hear it. So
even if they go away because of it. Yeah, you have
to
let go.
Yeah, yeah. We you know, we don't know.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Thank you.
I think
holding out for the
Holy Spirit's results always just astonishes me.
Mm-hmm. And you've had so many amazing examples, Paula, that you shared, and many of us, you know, on the calls about
that. You know, we want it instant. We want now. We want to know, feel, oh, no, I want it this way. And, you know, but the more I can let go of that instant gratification, it's, you know, we've been taught this crap.
Mm-hmm.
And just trust the Holy Spirit and, you know, detach from it somehow, whatever it is.
And by detaching, just to add some clarification to that term, it's through resting in God, resting in the Holy Spirit. I'm only saying this because there was another course person who said once, you know, you have to just, like, detach from things. And, like, if you're still believing they're real and detaching from them, that's not helping anybody. That's just, you know, that's not doing anything. It's about, again, turning to the Holy Spirit and resting in the Holy Spirit and allowing things to unfold. So that's, I just wanted to clarify that about that detachment.
Yeah.
It's not just being like, okay, I'm not going to just, you know, care anymore.
Yeah, oh, no. It's, but the Holy Spirit's results are just miraculous.
They really are. Ah. Thank goodness. Okay, next paragraph. That this is all the body does is true, for it is but a figure in a dream. But who reacts to figures in a dream unless he sees them as if they were real? the instant, and instant is underlined in this edition, the instant that he sees them as they are, they have no more effect on him because he understands he gave them their effects by causing them and making them seem real. So I'm just going to pause here just to say that when you recognize that we are the dreamer of this dream, that we're the one dreaming the dream, no more do they have effects on us because we see them for what they are. How willing are you to escape effects of all the dreams the world has ever had? Is it your wish to let no dream appear to be the cause of what it is you do? Then let us merely look upon the dream's beginning, for the part you see is but the second part, whose cause lies in the first. So in other words, we're going to, in these next few paragraphs, we're going to look at the dream's beginning, so that tiny mad idea, because what we see out there is the second part. What we see out there is the result of the tiny mad idea. What we see out there in the world is the result of the tiny mad idea. I'm going to keep going. It feels right to read the next paragraph. No one asleep and dreaming in the world remembers his attack upon itself. No one believes there really was a time when he knew nothing of a body and could never have conceived this world as real. He would have seen at once that these ideas are one illusion, too ridiculous for anything but to be laughed away. How serious they now appear to be. And no one can remember when they would have met with laughter and with disbelief. We can remember this if we but look directly at their cause. And we will see the grounds for laughter, not a cause for fear. Let us return the dream he gave away unto the dreamer, who perceives the dream as separate from himself and done to him. So this paragraph is saying that we don't remember that moment that we attacked ourselves in truth, but in other words, by taking seriously this idea that we could be separate from God, we can't remember or even conceive of a time when we knew nothing of a body and couldn't have ever even conceived this world as real. We would have absolutely seen those as ridiculous. We can't fathom that now, right? Because this is, it seems so serious. It seems so real. And again, just turn on the news and how serious does this all seem? How serious does it seem to have so many horrible events that have been transpiring? So we can't remember when we would have met that with laughter and disbelief, but it's saying we can remember this if we look directly at their cause. So if we're looking at that tiny mad idea, we're going to see grounds for laughter and not a cause for fear. This is where, in the beginning of the call, when I said it seems like this can seem really hard or almost preposterous, like how can you look at something, a horrific tragedy on the news, and laugh it away? Like how can we possibly do that? Well, obviously we can't do that of our small selves because we don't remember the truth. But this is where we are going. Into eternity, where all is one, there crept a tiny mad idea at which the Son of God remembered not to laugh. In his forgetting, did the thought become a serious idea and possible of both accomplishment and real effects? The instant that the madness of the cause is recognized, it can have no effects. I want to read that sentence one more time. The instant that the madness of the cause is recognized, it can have no effects. Together, we can laugh them both away and understand that time cannot intrude upon eternity. It is a joke to think that time can come to circumvent eternity, which means there is no time. A timelessness in which time is made real, a part of God which can attack itself, a separate brother as an enemy, a mind within a body, all are forms of circularity whose ending starts at its beginning, ending at its cause. So there is that closed loop of the ego thought system that there's timelessness in which time is made real. There's this belief that God can attack itself. Our brothers can be separate and enemies. Our minds are in our bodies. all this is the circular reasoning, the closed loop of the ego's fearful thought system. Now, I want to just bring us back to the first sentence that we just read. This is like that, you know, line I feel like that gets quoted so many times by course students. Into eternity, where all is one, there crept a tiny mad idea. I feel like a lot of times we forget the second part, at which the Son of God remembered not to laugh. Take that in for a moment. We remembered not to laugh. We remembered not to laugh. We chose not to laugh. It was a conscious choice to take it seriously. So here is our radical responsibility, our ultimate responsibility. This is where the, when we were talking about unconscious guilt, I think it was last week, and kind of saying how, like, you know, that's not really accessible, like it's not really relatable. This hidden memory, if you think about it, the Son of God's first attack upon himself, remembering to not laugh at these tiny mad ideas, indicating that, like, we maybe had crazy ideas, but we always laughed them away. Like, oh, that's absurd that we could be bodies. That's absurd that we could die. But then we remembered not to laugh at one of them. And then suddenly things became, we became very, very serious and took it seriously. Because we did that, that's where the Course is saying that this unconscious fear and guilt comes from, and that this is already healed because we're already home, but we think deep down that it's still there in our minds. I wanted to highlight the sentence, the instant that the madness of the cause is recognized, it can have no effect. So can we together just feel in for a moment to the idea, to this preposterous idea that time could intrude upon eternity? Can we, for just a moment, feel into, like, the madness of that, the craziness of that idea, and just chuckle? Like the instant that the madness of that is recognized, it can have no effects. The moment we can see that this tiny, mad, insane idea is just that, then it can't have effects anymore, because there we are, able to laugh at it again with the Holy Spirit. We have three more paragraphs, and we're gonna do them. But I want to pause here and see if anybody has anything coming up.
I just think the belief in death is the bottom line problem.
Mm-hmm.
And
the ego central dream.
The Course is just constantly, there is no death.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to get over this idea. It's a real challenge, but
yeah.
Boy, the more I get that from my head to my heart.
Mm-hmm. And that's what it's all about. It's about getting it from your head to your heart now.
Yeah. My daughter saw a terrible accident that really disturbed her, and we were talking about it the other night. When we were driving back, and it was kind of a bad storm when we were coming up from Toms River, and when we got up around Ocean Grove, I was taking her home, and she was talking about this. She said, "Ma, I just keep, you know, going over this in my mind. It's so disturbing." And with that, there was the most beautiful rainbow I have ever seen in my life. It was an intense rainbow against a dark black sky. And if that wasn't that boy that she saw, he was on a motorcycle. He hit a truck, and he died in front of her. And he does not want her to torment herself with that. Mm-hmm. And here's this rainbow. I said, "Laura, look at that rainbow."
Mm.
I'm sorry, but to me, that when my cat Ethel died, I'm driving home from the vet. I'm feeling like a monster having had put that cat down. And here's a rainbow. And it was like her spirit was flying over that arch and saying to me, "Forget it. I'm in heaven and all is well."
Not guilty.
Not guilty. No one. Nowhere. No time.
Oh, Paula.
I'm telling you, I get it when we're on this call. The energy that comes from this call on Sunday nights,
Yeah, I feel it too.
Yeah.
And that's why, I mean, that's why we do this, and that's why we come together, because I feel like it's like resetting, you know, it's like a reset button. We oh, yeah, ha-ha, it isn't real.
It isn't real. Oh, I forgot again.
Yeah.
The world teaches us crap every time I hang up the phone on Sunday night. I'm, you know, thrown back into this nonsense.
Oh, wow. Thank you, Paula.
You're welcome.
Let's keep reading. The world you see depicts exactly what you thought you did, except that now you think that what you did is being done to you. The guilt for what you thought is being placed outside yourself and on a guilty world which dreams your dreams and thinks your thoughts instead of you. It brings its vengeance, not your own. It keeps you narrowly confined within a body, which it punishes because of all the sinful things the body does within its dream. You have no power to make the body stop its evil deeds because you did not make it and cannot control its actions or its purpose or its fate. The world but demonstrates an ancient truth. You will believe that others do to you exactly what you think you did to them. But once deluded into blaming them, you will not see the cause of what they do because you want the guilt to rest on them. How childish is this petulant device to keep your innocence by pushing guilt outside yourself but never letting go. It is not easy to perceive the jest when all around you do your eyes behold its heavy consequences, but without their trifling cause. Without the cause do its effects seem serious and sad indeed, yet they but follow. And it is their cause that follows nothing and is but a jest. Okay, I'm going to pause here for these two pairs. Actually, you know what, I'm just going to read the last one and then we'll talk about it. In gentle laughter, does the Holy Spirit perceive the cause and looks not to effects? How else could he correct your error, who have overlooked the cause entirely? He bids you bring each terrible effect to him, that you may look together on its foolish cause and laugh with him a while. You judge effects, but he has judged the cause, and by his judgment are effects removed. Perhaps you come in tears, but hear him say, "My brother, holy son of God, behold your idle dream in which this could occur." And you will leave the holy instant with your laughter and your brother joined with his. So we all leave together then in laughter. So the Holy Spirit, in gentle laughter, does the Holy Spirit perceive the cause and look not to effects? We are constantly looking to the effects and trying to fix the effects there. So that relationship difficulty. I can tell you there was, Christy, last time you mentioned the relationship problem, I may have indicated this, but totally different circumstances, I'm sure, but I had a similar shocking thing happened with a friend who every time I said something trying to explain myself, it got just like worse and worse and worse, and they're still currently not speaking to me, and I have tried. It does bother me. You know, I'd much rather it not be this way, but trying to fix it just at the level of effect without me in this particular situation, I had to look at some resentments that I had in my mind before the fallout happened and wanting to, you know, perhaps blame this person or even still, you know, saying like, oh, well, this is just their problem. You know, I'm going to just like keep the guilt on them so I can stay innocent. Instead, it's about not looking necessarily to the effects, but looking with the whole, being willing to look with the Holy Spirit at the whole situation. And as I said earlier, holding steady there. So in this paragraph, how else could he correct your error who have overlooked the cause entirely? So we're skipping over the cause that this is our dream, that this is coming from our sleeping split mind that had that tiny mad idea, our way out is to bring each terrible effect to him, even if we are coming in tears, as it says. And together with the Holy Spirit, looking on that foolish cause, that tiny mad idea, that this is all a dream. Now, I want to switch real quick because I have to read this from Robert Perry's commentary. Let me just bring it up on my laptop because I'm going to be able to, it's going to be much bigger than on my phone. It is so great how he describes this. So listen to this. It's kind of lengthy. I just want to, okay, this is where, so in what we just read about the tiny mad idea, in this section, this is where Jesus makes an emotionally freeing point. If you see the outer effects by themselves, floating free of their cause, they do seem incredibly serious. And so think of something specific right now in your own life or on the news. Of course, they seem incredibly serious if we're just looking at the effects. When you see them as nothing but the outer picture of an impossible idea, the whole thing changes. If the cause could never happen, then its effects must be vacuous as well. What are the effects of flying pigs? Do any of us worry about pig feces falling on our heads? No, because pigs can't fly. Do you see how this changes the picture? That weak heart, so this is a health example that he gave, somebody with a weak heart. That weak heart is basically the fallout of pigs flying. That leaky roof, you know, if we have a roof that is leaking in our house that we're concerned about, that's the effect, that's the fallout of this idea of pigs flying, of taking it seriously. That bad marriage, that problem is the fallout of this idea of pigs flying. In other words, this tiny mad idea. Our calamities are all the outer picture of an idea that could never happen, the joke that time could intrude upon eternity. And I love this sentence. He says, they are all fictional falling feces from non-existent flying pigs. So the idea, the tiny man idea that we could be, you know, better off separate and special, every effect that we see is an effect of that false idea. That's all that it is. And when we can laugh at that idea with the Holy Spirit, the effects fall away. And remember that page 90 prayer from the FIP edition, the Holy Spirit will undo all the consequences of my wrong decision if I will let him. This is how those consequences are undone, because the Holy Spirit sees straight past those effects to the cause, which is the tiny mad idea, and straight past that, back to the truth that we've never left God. And that's how healing happens. So this is just, I always think of you, Paula, with just, you know, it's all about the Holy Spirit, like this is. Always about the Holy Spirit.
I have a quick question about that. So what I'm getting, what I'm hearing from that, this is Chrissy, is that obviously you have the willingness and look at it, take it to Holy Spirit. And then what I found sometimes is just by ignoring the behavior and because I'm looking at it as an external and saying it's not real. And this may be of the ego. That's what I'm trying to figure out. ignoring the behavior and saying that it's not real and to offer them love and have it be okay, even though it may have hurt me, can make the situation better by not just ignoring it and acting as if it didn't happen. Is that, am I missing a piece?
I'm so sorry. I don't think that I fully followed, but like, again, if you're being hurt in some way, that's something to look at. Like the course is not about not drawing a boundary, you know, like if we need to, sometimes the most loving thing is to put up a boundary, to say no, you know, especially if you're being hurt. So how we are called to give love in any particular relationship, that guidance has to come directly from Holy Spirit to you. So it's the type of thing that journaling could be, you know, really helpful in terms of just emptying yourself with all your concerns, all your fears, all your worries, just getting it all out and emptying yourself that way. And then when you're done writing, sitting and just listening quietly as best you can. Sometimes, you know, the most loving thing might be to draw a boundary. Sometimes it, again, I don't know your specific circumstance, but it might be to express love in some other more direct way. But the thing is that if we're deciding how that love should look, we're deciding from the ego, most likely, and this is all about, again, listening to that guidance in how that love should be expressed with being a miracle worker. We don't want to leave the Holy Spirit out.
Yeah, yeah. It's tough, yeah.
It is okay. Tough. It is tough.
You know, you're talking about... In romantic relationships especially, I think that's hard. Special relationships. Well, they're not just
relationships.
Romantic.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. It's
matters of the heart.
It can be quite an ego breeding ground, but remember, again, like, there's no order of difficulty in miracles. Like, going back to those first 50 miracle principles, if you can clear your mind of you feeling guilty, if you can be wholly willing to see the truth in that other person, even if it's just from a distance, if you have that willingness and you can get clear and you can just hold steady, a lot of big shifts can come out of that space.
Right.
Yeah. Can I throw something in here? Because
please.
It's so funny, you're talking about journaling and all, and I was journaling this morning, and I always comes back to page 90. So the Holy Spirit will undo all the consequences of my wrong decision if I will let him.
Yeah.
I choose to let him by allowing him to decide for God for me. And then I went on to write, when I decide wrongly, I'm deciding with the ego. It's hard to decide for God when the ego has your attention. Letting Holy Spirit, allowing Holy Spirit to decide for God for me takes the burden off of me.
Mm-hmm.
And God, whom you had thought to banish, can be welcomed back within the holy mind he never left. That's the real beauty of allowing the Holy Spirit to decide for God for you, because we're not doing it then. And the shift in perception when we allow that, I just find to be miraculous every time.
I love that, Paula. Did you write that?
Because I was had some madness going on in my mind this morning, and I realized, well, Jesus, I must be deciding wrongly because I'm not at peace.
Uh-huh.
I mean, how many times do I have to learn this lesson, Corinne?
I know. We're all in it together. You know,
so page 90 is truly, truly the most powerful prayer.
Yeah, I love that prayer in the FIP. It's in all the editions, but page 90 is just how I will forever remember it. Okay. We're at the top of the hour, so if you need to go, please feel free to go. But I promised you that we were going to run through an exercise from this commentary, and I do want to do that now. So if you just want to hang out for 5 minutes, I'm going to walk this. I'm going to read this as if it were a meditation. So I'm not going to ask anybody to share out loud. It does ask you to describe your circumstance to the Holy Spirit. So if you want to have paper nearby, you can jot it down, or you can just think of it. So let's go through this, because I thought it was just such a fantastic exercise. All right, so if you want to close your eyes, and what we're going to do is laugh at the tiny mad idea. So first, think of some quote-unquote terrible effect right now, some outer circumstance in your life that you perceive as pressing suffering onto you, and describe this circumstance to the Holy Spirit. So again, any outer circumstance in your life that is somehow causing suffering for you, either jot that down on paper or in your mind, describe that circumstance to the Holy Spirit. In your mind, now look upon the situation with the Holy Spirit. You've been gazing in anguish at the outer appearance, but he looks straight past that appearance to the idea that underlies it. He reduces the outer appearance to the view of reality that it seems to express. Perhaps the view is, time can come to circumvent eternity, or my tiny body actually contains my limitless mind, or maybe it's a belief like I, God's own son, can be rendered homeless and lacking. So the Holy Spirit reduces the outer appearance to the view of reality that that outer appearance seems to express. Whatever this view is, it is the actual cause of the outer appearance. The appearance has no reality in itself. It is just the outer picture of this idea. And again, we can boil that idea down to a belief that we are separate from our brothers and from God. So this outer appearance is just a picture of this tiny mad idea of separation. Try to see through the Holy Spirit's eyes so that you too can see the idea behind the outer form. What view of reality does the outer situation imply? What statement about reality does it make? The Holy Spirit sees it clearly. Try to join with him so that you too can see what this idea is. So in other words, you're joining with the Holy Spirit looking at these deep, hidden beliefs. Beliefs in separation, beliefs that our body can actually contain our mind, that we could be homeless or lacking, or that time could circumvent eternity. Now hear the Holy Spirit say to you, my dear brother, behold your silly dream. Only in a dream could such a ridiculous thing occur. Try to see the idea behind your dream as he sees it. Try to join with his perception and see just how preposterous the idea looks, how laughable it is. Try to realize that such a crazy idea could never produce reality, only dreams, only illusions. Can you see this from the Holy Spirit's perspective? Can you see how it all looks so silly and so trivial? Can you see how completely ridiculous it appears? Now hear the Holy Spirit laughing in your mind, gently and lovingly. Perhaps at first you don't see the humor in this situation, but his laughter is infectious, and as you hear him continue to laugh, you feel yourself being drawn into laughing with him. Now you have brought your terrible effect to him, that you may look together on its foolish cause and laugh with him a while. So do just that. Laugh with him a while. So it is preposterous that we could be separate from our brothers, that they could be angry with us, that we could possibly be guilty, that they could be guilty. Those are all absolutely insane ideas because we have not left our source. Everything else we can laugh away with the Holy Spirit. So I just thought that was a beautiful little exercise of looking at our What was it called? Terrible effects. Bringing them to the Holy Spirit. Any quick comments or reactions or questions or insights?
Just thank you for that.
Wasn't that great?
Yeah, that was wonderful.
Yeah, it was great.
I loved it. Yay. Awesome, everyone. Thank you so much. I love you all, and I'll see you next week. Have a good one.
Have a good one.
Have a good week.
Good night, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.